Welcome to HealthTech Matters, a podcast where we explore the ways how great healthcare products are built. I'm your host, Mary, and each week I talk to startup founders, product managers, and designers working in healthcare startups. In this episode, we are talking about joyful therapy, actionable steps for behavior change, and how to keep patients motivated for a long time. Welcome our guest, Rebecca Tinemon, VP of Nutrition and Health Coaching and digital food and nutrition platform, Munch Health. Stay tuned! What do you do at Munch Health right now?
We are on a mission to help people with chronic conditions like obesity, heart disease, and diabetes lead healthier and happier lives through the management of food and lifestyle. And one thing I love about early stage startups is that it's got this sort of renaissance nature. Personally, I thrive in a creative environment, and it's a joy to be a part of such an early stage of development where everything is so iterative. We have a relatively small team and a very impressive shop of hats. So basically, that means we all end up wearing a lot of them. Right now, I'm focused on scaling our team of registered dietitian nutritionists. We're expanding our team of clinicians that offer virtual care in the programs that we've designed, and also developing the clinical workflow so that we're meeting the standards necessary in healthcare here in the US, and then supporting the curriculum development as well from a functional nutrition point of view. So reviewing, we have a wonderful curriculum team that writes and designs some wonderful lessons for our participants in the program. And then I get to vet a lot of the nutritional content and weigh in here and there.
Could you please tell me more about this program?
Yeah, so we have three primary programs at Munch. Munch actually began as a platform that taught people culinary skill building. And our founder and CEO is a French-trained chef and very passionate foodie. And he created this platform, and the team at that time created this platform that was hacking culinary school. And then a few years back, Munch acquired a Swedish weight loss company called iTrim, and thus began this interesting merger of culinary skill building for chronic condition management, and specifically obesity at that time. And from that merger came our flagship program called Enjoy. And it's an intensive behavioral therapy program for obesity. We have opened it up to folks with also diabetes and most recently heart failure. And it's our longest intervention, and it's really this wonderful weaving of culinary skill building, true to the roots of Munch, with behavior change that's really rooted in self-determination theory and positive psych. That really helps people cultivate this sense of competence as well as social connection. So those three things are really important, not only for the Enjoy program, but for all of our programs. But there's this wonderful balance that happens that's teaching people how to manage their food life, how to develop culinary skills, and then also how to find that spark, find their way to happiness and joy again through their lifestyle choices.
Mm-hmm. That's a very, very interesting approach, because right now, obviously, diabetes is growing and there are so many startups managing these conditions, diabetes related. What is interesting about your program is this culinary part, because it's very unique, I'd say even.
Yes, it really is. And I have seen a lot of different programs over the years, and I would say that this culinary aspect is one of the pieces that really sets Munch apart in the digital health space, along with this sort of inversion, this approach of finding happiness first, and then the weight loss second, or the improved A1C, or the improved blood pressure, whatever it is, that's coming. But what about the things that actually light you up and get you excited about being alive? And maybe finding those will help all the other things. And so there is this sort of inverted narrative, if you will. And it's not to say that we don't keep our eye on the ball in terms of the clinical pieces that are really important to pay attention to. certainly are doing that.
So you must be targeting people who are mostly interested in cooking, first of all.
Well, that is a great observation. Yeah, a great thought. Some people come in, it's all over the board. Some people come in and are like, yes, I'm ready to spend X amount of hours in the kitchen preparing my food. Some people, they're not as motivated. And it's been an interesting, I think, challenge for all of us to think about, how do we make this practical? It's not really useful to impart all of this wonderful education and knowledge when it's not applicable to daily living. We're not using super fancy ingredients, but we're using functional ones that really are impactful when it comes to health, but that most people could find even in a food desert.
You should have these customer profiles, which are very different from almost chef to a person who has never cut cucumbers because he was eating in a canteen or like wife was cooking, whatever.
Yeah, well, it's a good point. Some people who come into our programs aren't the primary cook of the house. And so we do, especially this piece of social connection, so important to us on our participant support squad, as we refer to it. So important to be able to engage those people too and come up with opportunities for them to be in the know with what their loved one is learning and how to best support them on the journey as well.
Let's talk about two other pieces of the program you've mentioned.
So we have our flagship program called Enjoy. And that's the one I was mentioning, our intensive behavioral therapy program. And then since we've also evolved and created two additional programs. One is the Empower program, and that is a program that is a diabetes self-management training program. It's specifically for folks who have type 2 diabetes. As you mentioned, it's growing. There's a lot of people that are being diagnosed with this condition. We've created this wonderful education and behavioral change program that is accredited with the ADA, the American Diabetes Association. And so that is an exciting project we've been working on at Mond that does weave in, of course, the culinary piece. We have a wonderful culinary workshop that's a part of that with our head chef, who has just a special way of getting people excited about being in the kitchen. And all of our programs have unique elements. Like that's an example for the medical nutrition therapy program. But there's also this consistency with the culinary piece we've been chatting about a bit, as well as the behavior change piece. Those two things are really working in tandem for all three programs.
What do you think makes behavioral change so effective?
I think what makes behavior change so effective is that it helps people experience movement in their wellness. It's building a bridge between, oh, I want this and I'm here, to be able to actually make it happen. And we do that through a series of tiny actions. We really draw inspiration from BJ Fogg's work, who is out of Stanford, and have learned a lot from his work. And he's the director of the Persuasive Tech Lab at Stanford, and has created this little recipe for effective behavior change. One is getting specific and really being able to say, okay, you're here. Where is here exactly? What is that? What is it that you want to change specifically? How can we create some simplicity that will allow this to feel easier? And then the third thing is the prompt, right? There has to be a prompt to elicit that new behavior, whether it's something that's being done naturally or something that is created like an alarm. Of course, this simple recipe of, okay, getting specific, making it easy, and then creating the prompt and really following what's been proven to be effective for the process of change. It doesn't hurt to have a coach cheer you on, having people guide you and remind you that you're capable of this. And there's this wonderful balance between great questions that elicit insights and then reflections, and really being able to reflect for the participant the progress that they're making and help keep the motivation going. interestingly, I find that people are more comfortable. They're more able to open up in their own environment than when they're coming into a foreign environment. So they're coming into an office space they don't really know. They're meeting with somebody they've never met before in an in-person setting versus meeting from their living room or from their whatever room that is really comfortable and familiar to them.
Could you please name at least a few examples of these behavioral change techniques that you are using right now in the program?
Yeah. So let's say I want to sleep better and I'm finding that I'm going to sleep and I'm agitated because I just have so many things on my mind from the day. And I'm just finding that I can't get to sleep or I'm waking up often. I'm restless. I'm not really feeling rested when I wake up. And so I really want to sleep better. I really want to improve that. And so that is my, you know, specific thing. That's the thing I want to work on. And then how do I make that easy? What's something that I can do? What's an actionable step that I can take to help support that? And so this is where really fun brainstorming might ensue with between a coach and a participant. Maybe I find journaling really works for me. And so I'm going to write all the things down that are lingering. I'm going to recount the day. I'm going to go back through the day, and which can be a really powerful exercise to integrate the experiences that we have day to day. My mother, who is a music therapist, talks about end of life recall, which is an exercise that she does with some of her patients who are preparing to transition their life. And they do it through music, where they go back and recount their life through song, right? But I think it's similar for us. Every single day, we don't really integrate all the experiences that we're having. And then that creates this lingering energy that's undigested. And that just sort of creates this underlying agitation. And so being able to have some tools to express it, to name it, to process it and metabolize those experiences can be useful. And so for some people, again, that could be like journaling, where just whether it's journaling, brain dumping and saying, here are some of the experiences I had today. Wow, what do they bring up for me? That insight, oh, this thing, this feeling, oh, I didn't realize, you know, I was still feeling some of this from that experience. And then you could do something like gratitude, like, oh, what are the things I'm grateful for in this day? What are some of the things that also just really touched me today? And then I'm going to do that, let's say at 9 o'clock, I'm going to set my alarm and do it at 9 o'clock, or I'm going to do it after I brush my teeth. That's like a natural example. And that would be the prompt piece. So that's an example of a change that could be applied to this simple process.
And BJ Fogg talks a lot about emotions and how new habits are tied with our emotions. You should celebrate your tiny habits because otherwise you will never ever want to repeat it again for so many times, and that's what you want. So how do you design the product that it's tied with your emotions of the patients?
When I'm working with patients or with clients, I might even guide them to anthropomorphize some of these feelings they're having or emotions they're having. If you're sitting with this feeling, what does it look like? What does it sound like? What is it? What sorts of things is it telling you? What sorts of memories are coming up? And being able to really entertain these emotions, if you will, rather than push them away, bury them, ignore them, all the things. Because the thing about emotions is they're going to just continue until their message lands. So being able to really welcome the emotional experience as a part of the process is key. And also to choose things that do elicit emotion. The celebration piece is huge. And at Monge, we double down on that one. It is a huge aspect of our coach approach to celebrate the tiny wins, big wins. The step that was taken because it activates the reward circuitry of the brain and ultimately helps to keep motivation going. And it's fun. You know, the other piece of it is sometimes the change process might seem heavy or difficult, arduous and serious. But at Monge, there's this levity to the whole thing. And there's this real inclination towards having fun through it all and not get overwhelmed by the weight of it all, but to really enjoy it. I would say the celebration piece really helps to bring that lightness into the mix.
Mm-hmm. And what are your favorite ways how to celebrate?
because celebrations are extremely hard. Sometimes you're feeling like you're obliged to do this. So what do you want to celebrate? Come on, guy. You have so much to do.
It's true. It's hard sometimes for us to acknowledge the win. Some of the things that we encourage at Mind are to share the wins, to create a group text or an email with their support squad, with people that they trust in that are really wanting the best for them, and share the wins that they've had, or to create the list, the checklist, and even just the small reward of like hitting the box, you know, saying I did that, and really having that checklist to check off. Some people get really motivated by that. It could be just taking a minute, even less than a minute, but to appreciate and feel appreciation for one's own job well done, whether that's like a mental high five or whatever image comes up, but like a real pat on the back, if you will. Mm-hmm. You can take it back old school, like we all did when we were kids, and create a reward chart with stickers. I know with my daughter, we have these paths. When she does her piano practice, she gets to color in a square, or when she does her 30 minutes of reading, she gets to put a sticker on the map. And there's something that a lot of us have experienced in our life, having a reward chart with stickers, and it can be fun for adults too. Also, writing the wins down and keeping a jar of all the wins, and then having a dedicated time to go back and review them. Oh yeah, look at all the wins that I've had this month, or look at all the wins I've had this quarter, or look at all the wins I've had this year. You could journal, keep a tally. You could put coins into a piggy bank every time you have a win, and then save them up for something that reflects back to you the progress that you've made. I mean, gosh, you could blow bubbles. There's a lot of things you could do to celebrate. But helping people, I think the thing is that helping people connect with what feels celebratory to them. What are the things that really you associate with celebration? And of course, taking it away from food as much as, you know, we can when we can, or maybe there's something healthy we could choose. But a lot of times celebration does revolve around food. And so being able to think outside of that box and come up with other ways to really drive that motivation and self-acknowledgement and stay the course.
That's actually a wonderful change. I'm pretty sure most of your clients have in their life after they finish the program. So it's ability to celebrate small wins. What other behavior changes do you think they mostly have?
I'm a clinical nutritionist. I meet with somebody, they're telling me what's going on. And I could say that you want to work on right now. What are you excited about? I think the most important thing when it comes to behavior change is that it's personal, that they are excited to change it, and that they are motivated to change it. There's some energy there for them. Let's start there versus like all these other things that certainly may benefit their health, but probably aren't going to stick if they're not wanting to change it. So it's really looking at, okay, where's the excitement? Where's the spark? Let's go there and keep finding it, following the breadcrumbs. Some of those bigger things that are maybe harder or more intimidating for people, once you build some confidence by following those things that you are motivated to change, then those things become more manageable. They become a little easier to handle. And so it's hard to say a short list of the top things, because it really, truly is so individual.
It's an interesting case that you mentioned, but let's say a person is stressed, depressed, and it's so hard to understand, where is my energy? I'm at the bottom. So how do you, as a therapist, understand where should you go to find this energy?
Yeah, that is a discovery process, right? I feel when somebody is in a rut like that, I think sometimes you want to say, oh, just get out of it. Or like, what about this over here? Science says this helps with depression and that and this and that. But none of that really works, right? A long term. But what does work is digging in to that knot a little bit more with the patient or the participant in the program. And one way we do that through the coach approach is through reflection, and really being able to facilitate a deeper conversation discovery process of what's underneath this resistance, this ambivalence, or this like inertia. Let's say the client says, I'm feeling depressed. and you reflect that you're feeling depressed. Or the client says, I really want to start exercising again. And then the coach might say, exercising is very important to you. And being able to reflect back in a way that is amplifying, or that is just simply repeating what they're saying, so that they can keep peeling back the layers of the onion and eventually get to the core of what is there to discover. When you hear that ambivalence or that resistance coming up, reflection is a really powerful tool to be able to help get some sort of opening. Being able to have patience and skills to hold the space for that discovery process is a really effective strategy.
Yeah. I think right now many people are depressed or maybe overwhelmed about their work, especially work-life balance, because this is remote cultures and you didn't have actually a life balance. You have just work and work and more work balance. These depressions and stresses are often leading to overeating. Do you find it true?
You can actually use habit design and behavior change to help create that balance. So if somebody is struggling with the overeating piece, sometimes it's exploring this piece of it. Okay, you're getting something out of this. What are you getting out of it? And, oh, I just feel like a sense of relaxation after I have this thing. And so really being able to tease out, you know, what's the reward that's happening. And what are some other ways that work for them, that really inspire them, that could help them get to where they need to be with that balance, but that might be better for their health overall?
Everybody who's coming is very different, as you mentioned. And obviously, some people won't be that confident. Even at the start, they want to invest some money, time, resources in a program, and let's say they want to say goodbye to diabetes. So how do you keep them motivated? Because, for example, for the first few weeks, maybe even month, they won't really be able to see some huge changes.
Yeah, motivation also ebbs and flows for all of us. And I think one thing is really checking in with people who join. Is this the right time for them to join? Is this the right moment in their life to really focus on this? And really assessing readiness for the change process. And let's say they're ready, they come in, motivation is high. Then it's being able to set appropriate, walk through some appropriate steps to be able to help collect some early wins that will help drive the motivation as well. But even before that, we really talk a lot. We spend a lot of time to get to know the patient or the participant and really understand their wellness vision and understand what their North Star is. What is it that is motivating them in their life? We work with things like affirmations. Like if you could think of a short phrase or saying that can help remind you of this thing, of this North Star that really is moving you in your life. What might it be? How would you like to experience it? You put on a post-it note or record yourself saying it, or tell your friends who can repeat it back to you, whatever it is, but be able to give them some tools to stay connected to the bigger thing that's really motivating them intrinsically in their life. And then set up some steps to get some early wins. I have clients sometimes just to come and they're like, I'm embarrassed to meet with you today. I didn't do the things. And those are the moments to remind them, reflect for them that the process is nonlinear, right? That being able to then relax into it and open to whatever is there to learn, whatever is there to experience, and then move from there. You might find you don't have the right hardware one time, or you run out of this thing, or the weather comes and like things don't happen just like you might envision them all the time. And so being able to meet people in those moments is, I think, one of the most important pieces for driving motivation, for them to know that they're not going to be alone in those moments.
And it's great that you mentioned affirmations. Could you please tell me more, maybe give an example?
Yeah. Let's say they have their North Star. They've named what is it that's really motivating them in their life. We might say, okay, well, what is it that really helps you to remember that? And maybe like the North Star is, I want to embody kindness. An affirmation might be, I am kind. That's simple, right? It doesn't have to be too elaborate, but it's basically like a little thing that phrase or mindset trick that helps people remember positivity and the ability to influence and create a mindset. And so that's, we might call it a personal mantra. A mantra is essentially a Sanskrit word. Man is mind, and trust, repetition is this phrase that you repeat that helps to build positivity muscles and overcome the roadblocks or the things that can create downward spirals that eventually lead us off the course. And there's certainly, gosh, lots of examples. Let's say somebody's North Star is they want to laugh often. They want to really embody joy. Their affirmation could be, I'm joyful, or I'm fun, or today I'm playful. If the purpose is, I want to be a leader, then the affirmation might be, I'm courageous, or I trust my courage, or I trust my intelligence. It's just like other things we've been talking about. It's personal. And so it's using words that have meaning to the person, you know, not language that I, the coach, might say, but language that is important to them, that means something to them, that can really be a disruptive way of reaffirming in any moment when negativity might be encroaching. Oh, well, I am kind. I am joyful. I laugh easily. This, and really redirect our own course.
And I have a few fast fire questions to you. What is one thing that you believe in that is unconventional wisdom?
That's a good question. Unconventional wisdom. Gosh, I don't know if it's unconventional, but I believe that everything is perfect as it is. That's hard sometimes, especially when we have a certain outcome in mind, a certain perception, things are going to go a certain way, to be able to welcome things as they are. Mm-hmm. And I would say to some people, maybe unconventional, right? It's like, do you want things to go this way? But then this happens. And to me, there's an incredible wisdom in the way things naturally happen. And to be able to trust life and trust the process and welcome whatever's happening just as it is, feels a little unconventional and novel.
Yeah, it is. Because for me, if it's not like the way I want it, oh, hell.
Right? It's like, it's broken. It's ruined. But honestly, if we take a step back and we see how it played out and we just open to it and welcome what happened or what is happening, we can see the gift in it. There's something that maybe we don't want, but we need it. Like something that's coming that is really for us. I think this is the other axiom that I really live by, is that life is happening for us, not against us. And I do in my own life. And it's sometimes things come like, wait, no. but when you remember, oh, this is happening for me. And then it opens up this whole other side. It's like a prism. You see things from a different angle. And it's like, oh yeah, well, I could see that this could be beneficial here. This is helping me with this. It really helps us to trust life and to trust the natural things that are unfolding, and that we're supported, that we have so much support in our journey.
If you could write anything on the billboard, your message, what would it be?
That's a great question too. I would say, I trust life. Gosh, it's taken me a while to get here, but to allow ourselves to be lived and to trust that life is living through us, that we are certainly participatory in the process, but that there's also something greater that's working with us and through us, and that, you know, we can trust it, that life is on our side. And what a gift to be alive, even in these crazy times. But to be able to trust that there's meaning and intention beyond our understanding, and that transcendence for me is something that really moves me in the world and in my life. And so that's probably on my billboard, love is the antidote for sure, to find our medicine through the frequency of love, self-care, and be able to share that with the world feels important as well.
Yeah, that's very true. And what new behavior or maybe habit has improved your life during the last 3 years, let's say?
That's a great question too. That's so many great questions. Gosh, what habits have improved my life over the last 3 years? I work from home a lot. Before COVID, I worked from home a lot. And in history, you mentioned a little while ago, this, it's like work and more work and more work. It's hard to delineate work life from home life, from other life. And it's one thing that I find really helpful is to take time to reset in the day between when I might be going from working hours to home hours with my family or with my friends or with a passion project that I have, being able to take time to meditate or to just reset and have a mindful rest moment to transition into whatever I'm doing. You could think of it as like a transition reset. So it could be any time you're moving into a transition in your day, to bring more presence into it, to bring more mindfulness into it. And so that brings the energy. It helps you separate intentionally. Okay, I know there's always going to be more things to do. And right now I'm going to be choosing this. I'm going to be focusing my energy on these things and to be able to really create a mindful transition. That is really a meaningful thing. And then the other is just starting my day. There's a really wise elder that I've been fortunate to meet in my life who taught me that we can choose our orientation at any moment. We can choose from where we're orienting. And I find that to be a really effective way to start the day. And so I wake up in the morning and might sit in my sacred space and my meditation cushion and decide from where do I want to orient on this day? And maybe it's from an energy of focus, or maybe it's from an energy of unconditional love, or maybe it's from an energy of strength, but we get to choose and then take time to feel, okay, feel myself open-hearted or feel myself focused and choosing my orientation. I would say it's been a huge habit for me to start my day with just a simple orientation meditation.
Yeah, that's great. I've never heard about this one. And you must have many interesting morning and evening rituals. Could you share some of them?
Yeah. So I shared with you the one sitting and my orientation moment for sure that helps. Sometimes I might couple that with some breath work or some movement. But even before that, I like to oil pull, which is this Ayurvedic ritual actually, where you swish oil around in your mouth. It's great. And we could spend a whole nother hour on the implications of oral health and the rest of the body, but I won't, I digress. But oil pulling is just an ancient, you know, practice in the Ayurvedic tradition that really helps to cleanse the oral cavity. And so I like to spend time doing that in every morning. I sometimes do toning, which is like a vocal exercise to move energy through the body system. And music is one of my favorite pastimes. And so being able to also warm up my voice in a way to be able to sing more throughout the day feels useful. I drink warm water with lemon almost every day. It's a way that I like to break my fast and to just get things going. It's great for anybody that has sluggish digestive fire as well. Even sometimes if I'm really feeling like my digestion isn't really up to snuff, I might also do pickled ginger, like do a ginger appetizer, and the heat of the ginger can really help to kindle things too. I also in the evening like to turn the technology off, turn things on airplane mode, and give myself some winding down time. I love taking baths and do that regularly. Gratitude also is a really wonderful, and specifically like naming things in the day that happened that can be a useful way to practice the gratitude. Sometimes I do yoga nidra, which is a specific type of meditation that I have studied that is yoga sleep essentially. And it really helps to improve a state of relaxation and also provide a forum to process any emotions or other material that might be around. Taking some time after the technology is off to really emphasize self-care is important.
And what do you do when you are overwhelmed and you can't just collect enough energy to do what you should do?
Oh my gosh, I go straight for the forest. For me, you know, when I'm having moments of overwhelm, I just stop and just take time in nature. It almost always is something that really helps me process and reflect and connect more with what's coming up. I take my nature time seriously. We are fortunate in California to have access to so much nature, to so many trails, to be able to get out year round. And I don't take that for granted, for sure.
When you cannot get out, many people cannot because they're in a city. And
when I can't get out, I sit down and I just also take a time in. I really taught my daughter this versus the time out as well. Taking time in to just pause. The overwhelm is a powerful signal, a powerful piece of information. Like, okay, I need to stop for a second. I need to pause and just take time in to see what's going on. And so for me, it would be sitting down. And through techniques that I've learned, like the yoga nidra, you can visit internally without going anywhere outside of your physical space. You can adventure to your sacred place, your inner resource, or this place that is like this refuge inside yourself. Okay, all of this is happening, this overwhelm, but also this is here. Also the safe place is in the midst of all these other feelings I'm having. You don't necessarily have to go out into the forest to find it, although there might be places out there that help you connect with that place.
Previously, I was living near the park and it was amazing. Every single day I could go out and yeah, it was just amazing. You're lucky to be where you are.
You know, I'm a huge advocate too of creating a sacred space though, wherever you are, whether you're traveling to a place that's new. I have friends that are nomadic, for example, mm-hmm. who don't really have a home. It can be a corner in a room, or it can be like a shelf. So it doesn't have to be this big elaborate temple all the time. It can be something very simple, but that is a place that you can go to when you need to reset or have these rituals. And what makes the place sacred is the energy we bring to it, right? And so being able to design a little area where we can go and have our quiet time, our check-in time, our mindful moments, our rest. We just need to just rest. Yeah. You know, it's really important.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure to talk to you. And behavior change is a huge topic. I love it so much.
Thank you so much again. Bye-bye.